यस्मिन् देवा अरिविश्वे निषेरुः यस्तं न वेद किं विचार करिष्यति य इत्थं विरुस्त इमे समासते. The Rig Veda mantras. And all the demigods take shelter of him in the spiritual sky, from which no one falls. Page 75. What use has one for the Rig mantras if he does not know this Lord? It is a mistake, it should be if. What use has one for the Rig mantras if he does not know this Lord? Whoever knows him, however, surely resides in him. This is a verse that's originally in the Rig Veda, but it's actually critical of the study of the Vedas without devotion to the Supreme. Here's the principle that devotional service is essential for substantial success in spiritual endeavor. Without devotional service, even expert study of the Vedas is useless. And the Rig Veda itself is saying this. Yatanna Veda, one who doesn't know this, Kimricha, what use is he going to make of his Rig Veda mantras? All his Vedic knowledge, what use is it to him if he's not a devotee of the Supreme? So one who has knowledge of the Supreme Person is actually successful in life. What does this knowledge mean? We've had that explained to us several times over and over again in this Upanishad. It's direct perception in one's heart, personal realization of the Lord in the heart. This goes as far as super soul realization. There's not a discussion here in this Upanishad of developing one's intimate rasa with the personality of Godhead. Not even a relationship of servitude with Lord Vishnu in Vaikuntha. As far as the extent of the discussion of devotional service in this Upanishad is simply developing relationship with the Lord in this world, particularly with the Lord as the super soul in your own heart. But that's also the beginning of devotional service. That's devotional service in Shantaras. It's one way to approach. Of course, we're practicing a different form of devotional service that begins with active service. Prabhupada explained, although there are devotees in Shantaras, in our Krishna consciousness movement, we begin from dasya. We begin as servants. From the very first day that we start practicing, we're practicing in the functional relationship of servitude. But there are different methods for different times and different people. And for these sages, it's appropriate. They're, by nature, meditators. They tend to be impersonal. So for them, just to practice approaching the Lord in a neutral way, as the super soul in the heart, that's appropriate for them, it's effective. It doesn't mean they can't go beyond this, but it's a good beginning. So one who has such direct perception of the super soul in the heart, that's the success of his life. Whereas, on the other hand, somebody who has studied all the Rig Veda mantras and performed so many sacrifices, that labor is useless if he has no realization of the Lord in the heart. Rig mantras, that means the mantras of the Rig Veda, but it's a particular kind of mantra, a particular kind of language. The mantras of the Rig Veda are all in very fixed meters, with fixed intonation. They're certain very stereotyped kind of poetry. And this is a Rig mantra. And the Rig Veda is composed of such mantras. Other Vedas have different kinds of mantras. That is simply metaphorically representing all the Vedas. all this Vedic knowledge, any theoretical knowledge, is inadequate without bhakti, without devotion. It's said in this verse that the Rig Veda mantras and all the demigods take shelter of the Supreme in the Supreme Sky, Paramevyoman, Akshare. That Supreme Sky is infallible, meaning that the spiritual world itself is incorruptible. It's not like the material world that grows old. The sun itself may last for billions of years, but eventually it'll grow old and get cold. And in the end, the whole world will be destroyed. So this material world grows old and dies. That the topmost sky, Vaikuntha, does not change, does not grow old, and doesn't die. This is an illusion, a hint at the Lord's personal existence in Vaikuntha. At least there's mention of the spiritual sky here. Another meaning of the spiritual world, Vaikuntha being infallible, is that no one who lives there has to fall. No one's pushed out of Vaikuntha. If you go to heaven, you can enjoy for a long time, but eventually you'll be kicked out. Just like if you stay in the guest house and don't pay your bill, eventually you'll be asked to move out. Well, when your karma is used up and you have no means to pay your bill, your rent, in Swargaloka, in heaven, you're asked to move on. Vaikuntha, there's no one is kicked out. Those who fall do by their own wrong exercise of free will. That's another meaning of akshara, infallible. We can also understand sky, instead of talking about Vaikuntha, to mean God himself. He's like the sky because he is infinite. And he's all-pervading, he's everywhere, and he's in contact with everything. And nothing touches him. He's not affected by anything material. Just like the sky, like the ether, which is infinite, which is everywhere, which is in contact with everything, but nothing actually touches the ether. There may be smoke, there may be pollution in the air. The ether is not polluted. Air is polluted, but ether is not. The ether remains pure, unaffected by any contact. The Lord is like that, so he's like the sky. And we could take the word sky in this verse to be metaphorically referring to the Supreme Person himself. Somebody who has simply learned the Vedic mantras, but is not meditating and worshipping the Lord through his meditation, the Lord who is the actual Supreme, who is revealed in those mantras, he's simply pursuing the goal of karma, fruitive endeavors. And what benefit will he get? He'll go to heaven, enjoy, maybe be successful as a karmi. He can go to heaven and enjoy some limited temporary fruits. But everything he can enjoy is fallible and very insignificant. Only by knowing the Supreme can one transcend birth and death. There's no other path to perfection. Certainly not by fruit of works and ordinary sacrifice without devotion. But those who understand by practicing bhakti yoga, yaitanvidus, those who know him, those who meditate on him with devotion, they can easily become situated in perfection. Samasate means to become fixed, to become established. They reside in him eternally. They become free from all agitation and successful in life. Okay, so there's another rephrasing, it's been said 10 or 15 different ways, of the basic theme of the Upanishad. By knowing the Supreme Person, by becoming his devotee, one attains perfection, liberation. Unfortunately, it doesn't say love of God. This is karma, jnana mishra bhakti. So the motivation of liberation is prominent here, instead of the motivation of pure love. But at least it's consistent. Consistently presented theme. Okay, text 9. Yeah, please. Nobody, I tried to phrase it carefully. No one has to fall, or no one's kicked out. That's the meaning of being a marginal jiva, a member of the marginal potency. That means you have the potential to fall prey to the attractions of illusion. Yes. We always maintain the potential. It's talking about someone who goes back there. That means someone who fell once. You know, go there means you're not that you are one who, it doesn't say one who is there, and one who goes there. It means from here to there. So we're, you know, it means someone who has already come to this world, then goes back there. He's very unlikely to make the same wrong choice again. Okay, just like Empire State Building, there used to be a few people every year who would jump off it. And they finally had to build, you know, up on the observation tower on the 103rd floor. They built very high fences so people couldn't jump off. Still, every once in a while someone managed to climb the fence, and once in a while somebody jumps. I don't know if anybody's ever survived, you know, falling 103 floors. In the rare case that someone managed to climb the fence and fell and survived, it's very unlikely he's going to try it again after having experienced, you know, falling from the top of the Empire State Building. He could. He's got the potential to do it. But I don't think in the history of the, you know, in the history of the existence of that building since 1931, anybody's ever done it twice, jump off the building. Even if someone survived, it's just the chances are too slight. So like that, there's no history of anybody falling from Vaikuntha twice. It could happen theoretically. But we don't read in Shastra of anything like that ever actually having happened. So at least you can state statistically, nobody going back to Vaikuntha, nobody falls down a second time.
Do you remember
my experiences? Yes. You can remember everything. Not faint. If you want, whatever you want to remember, you can. Because in the material life, we don't remember from one day to the next, practically. Most of it, what do you remember what you were doing, you know, 2 o'clock yesterday, exactly? Maybe 2 o'clock, you know, 31 days ago? And especially traumatic things, we very intentionally forget. You know, our psychology helps us forget painful things. But that's material life. There is no such covering psychology in the spiritual world. There's no pain. You know, it's not too painful to remember the material world. You may think, I was such a fool. But you're not embarrassed to admit you're a fool. You were a fool, and you still are a fool, once you've retained your spiritual consciousness. It's not too painful to face reality when you're in spiritual consciousness. And everybody in the spiritual world is in perfect spiritual consciousness. It doesn't have to be covered over by forgetfulness. So there's no, you know, yoga maya can help us forget that Krishna's God even. But that's just for the purpose of pastimes. If you want to remember, then you can. If there's any purpose to remember, if it helps your service to remember, then you can. And certainly it helps your service to know that you have the potential to fall down, that you did it once and you couldn't do it again. That's a useful thing to know. It's not just out of complete ignorance that God doesn't let us know we could fall, and we, you know, He trips us up. He sets us up, and we're completely innocent of the fact that we could fall, and it's all God's fault. You know, it's not like that. We knowingly fall down. And Everybody knows if you jump off the top of the Empire State Building, you probably won't survive it. And people who jump off want to kill themselves. There's no other reason to do it. It's intentional. Okay. By knowledge leads to liberation, and then that's elaborated. Knowledge means devotion. Knowledge means meditation. That meditation is a form of devotion. And the liberation is developing one's personal relationship with God and one's own spiritual identity. It's a particular understanding of what knowledge is and what liberation is. Yes? He's talking about upasana, which is meditation, but he's describing it as a personal dedication to the Supreme. Making a transaction and a sacrifice, giving up your illusory attachment, your attempt to be the exploiter of this world, in order to become the servant of the Supreme. That is being discussed here. The higher aspects of pure love, that's not being described. That's not, Shaitashvatara is not getting into that that level of devotional service. But the elementary principles of devotion, of self-surrender, that he is discussing. And of personal relationship with the Supreme. The Supreme, at least as the controller and the creator, he's being described as the Supersoul, who's displaying part of his personality. The Supersoul is displaying his personality, his official aspect, in his role as the creator and maintainer of this world. Because Krishna has his more intimate personality. It's like you may know a man officially. You may know some government officer, court judge, and you only know his official personality. You don't know what, if he's married or what he does when he goes home from work. Someone else knows him in that aspect. But it's still, you know the person. You know some aspect of his personality. Like that. This is knowing some official aspect of God's personality. That's devotion. It's the kind... Jnana Mishrabhakti, yes. It's devotion mixed with jnana. Who's God? God's the creator of this world, the awarder of liberation. Not that God is, the most beautiful cowherd boy. Now, that aspect, same person, but that aspect of his personality is not being revealed in this kind of devotion. But it is a kind of devotional service, just mixed with selfish motives, self-centered motives focused on the problems of this world. In one's own material life. Devotion to God in the material world. Okay, we have some other verses. Chandamsi yagya kvato vratani bhutam bhavyam yat chaveda vadanti asman mahi Svijate vishvam etad tasmin chanyo mayaya sanirudha. He is the magician who conjures up from maya this whole universe, including the Vedic meters, fire sacrifices, soma sacrifices, and pious vows. I left out a phrase. Says and soma sacrifices. It should be soma sacrifices and pious vows. Left that word, that phrase out. And everything else, past, present, and future, which the Vedas describe. In this same universe, the other living entities are entrapped by his maya. Excuse me. So he's the magician. The word is mayi, possessor of maya. But maya also means magic in the ordinary sense. So he's a magician, sorcerer. And he conjures up, his magic is to, out of maya, produce the whole universe, including everything. The Vedas, fire sacrifices, different kinds of sacrifices, fire and soma sacrifices, and all pious vows that are taken by devotees. So the infallible Supreme Person creates everything by his energy, particularly the material energy, prakriti, maya. He creates, out of maya, he creates the Vedic meters, or the Vedas themselves. He creates the sacrifices, There's two kinds of sacrifices mentioned here, yajna and kletu. Yajna are fire sacrifices that don't involve offering of soma or animal sacrifice. Simpler sacrifices. The more complex sacrifices that have many fires, many priests, and involve animal sacrifice and soma offering, these are called kratu or sutra. There are various vows of austerity, like chaturmasya. He creates these also, these means of elevation for the conditioned jivas, different austerities. All the different activities that are prescribed by the Vedas and different kinds of different activities that are forbidden by the Vedas, illicit activities, he creates all those. The whole visible world he creates, both moving and non-moving beings. And the Lord of Maya generates all of this visible, all these visible phenomena from Maya, from material nature. Question may be, someone may wonder, how can this world be created, which is full of variety and change? How is it created from the unchanging one Brahman? And if the Vedas are eternal, how can they be created? So the answer is, the Lord himself is unchanged, constant, but his energies change for him. The nature transforms, and thus the world appears variegated. Her modes transform. And the Vedas are eternal, but they're displayed, they're manifested in the material creation periodically by the Lord. He speaks to Brahma, Brahma speaks to his sons, and so on. Or when Lord Matsya appears, when there's periodic deluge, he speaks the Vedas again to Manu. Lord Hayashirsha, I agree that he appears sometimes and speaks the Vedas to Brahma when they're lost. When the Vedas were stolen by the demons Madhu and Kaitava at the beginning of creation, Lord Hayagriva, horse-headed Lord, appeared, killed those two demons, and thus became known as Madhusudana, Kaitabari. And he spoke the Vedas, which they had stolen. He spoke them to Lord Brahma. So the Lord speaks the Vedas when they've been forgotten or stolen. He creates this world, but the other living entity, the jiva, has a tendency to become trapped by this illusion. Destroying this illusion is liberation. That's the implication. He's trapped because he falls prey to illusion. Destroy the illusion, remove the illusion, he'll be free. Okay. One reference here from the Vedanta Sutra, third chapter, third part, or second part, verse 26. The sutra says, Ubaya vyapadeshad twahi kundalavat. Brahman is identified with the elements, earth, and so on. Brahman is sometimes described as the same as ether or as air. He's akash, he's prana. Sometimes he's identified with various elements, the Supreme. Brahman is identified with the elements, earth and so on, because he is described as both different and non-different from the creation, like a snake in its own coil. The snake and the coil, the coil is part of the snake, but they're sometimes described as non-different, sometimes described as different. This coil is an integral part of the snake's body. Like that, everything that exists, whatever you want to name, is an energy of Brahman. And so Brahman can be described as identical as his energy because of the simultaneous relationship of difference and non-difference. So, Baladeva Vibhushan comments, there are various statements that demonstrate this fact. Like, Atme Vedam Sarvam, Atma Vaidam Sarvam, the Self, the Supreme Self, is everything that exists in creation. And then there are various statements in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, like, Asman Mayi Srijate, this verse we're reading now, which describes the Lord is one and many at the same time. this possessor of Maya creates this whole variegated world through Maya. He's one, but he becomes many in appearance. And another statement, Dve Vava Bamano Rupe. This is from Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Brahman indeed has two forms. Dve Vava Bamano Rupe Murtam Cha Murtam Cha. His manifest form and his unmanifest form. His, the appearance of all the phenomena of this world, that's the manifest form of Brahma. And what we don't see, his original light, spiritual form, ordinary people don't see that. That's his unmanifest form. Brahman has both these aspects. He's one and he's many at the same time. Okay, we're going to verse 10.
Mayam tu prakritim vidyan, mayinam tu maheshwaram. Tasya vayabhutaistu vyaptam sarvam idam jagat.
Understand that Maya is material nature. And the magician who possesses Maya is the Supreme Lord. His finite expansions of living souls fill this entire created world. This is an important verse. Prabhupada quotes it sometimes. It's quoted in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It may seem very simple and trivial to us because we know this philosophy, but it's certainly informative for someone who's not clear about the facts of spiritual reality. Mayavadis are confused about what is Maya. Their axiom is that Brahman is one without a second. There is nothing else. So they can't admit that Maya exists. There's no material. They have to explain the material world. Here's duality, here's imperfection, and you say the absolute truth is perfect and non-dual. What creates this duality and this imperfection? So they have to postulate the function of Maya. But they can't admit that Maya exists, because nothing's supposed to exist other than Brahman. And Brahman can't be imperfect. Brahman can't be illusion. So they're very confused about what Maya really is. They say Maya doesn't. You can't say Maya exists. You can't say Maya doesn't exist. She's indescribable. That's their excuse. Say, well, she's indescribable. You can't say one way or the other. She exists or she doesn't exist. But she, her effect is what we see in front of us, and she imposes that effect on Brahman, even though nobody's supposed to be able to touch him. There's nobody existing to touch him, but somehow Maya's there, and she twists him around and makes illusion. This is not a good explanation of what Maya is. It's totally confusing. It's just covered over by the excuse that Maya cannot be explained. Cannot be explained in words. Here's the words explaining what Maya is. Very simple, straightforward terms. Forget Shankaracharya and all these Maya buddies. Here's what the ancient sages say. This is what the original Vedas say. Maya is the Lord's personal energy. And the supreme controller is the possessor of Maya. She's his personal possession. She acts on his behalf, carrying out his desire. And he's totally in control of her. That's how this world is created. And this world is real, because it's an evolution of the Lord's desire through his energy. There's nothing unreal about it. And there's the third energy of the Lord, the jivas. There's the Lord himself, his nature, and the infinitesimal jivas. They're filling up this world and trying to enjoy it. It's created for their enjoyment. Tasyavayava bhutaistu. And by his parts and parcels, the jivas, this whole world is filled up. It's like real estate speculators would rather not build a house unless someone's ready to buy it and pay for it. Sometimes they have to. In the process of speculation, build houses. They don't know who's going to buy them. It better first get a purchaser. So material nature is a very economical manufacturer. She doesn't create anything until somebody wants it. No material body is created until there's some living entity who wants it. And the whole world is not created until somebody wants it. It's for, to fulfill the desire of the living entity, that this world is created. That's the purpose of it. Okay, the commentators say, this verse is answering the question, who is Maya? Going back to the original question, one of the original questions in the first verse, by what are we made to suffer in this world? The answer is Maya. And what's Maya? The personal energy of the Lord. She provides the ingredients of creation. She is the ingredients. She's inert, but by her connection with the Supreme Person, she becomes active. He's the impeller who gives her life and power. Even Maya herself is manifested from him. She doesn't exist independently. And then the jivas, who are the parts and parcels of the Lord, they give life to this world. The demigods and all the other jivas are the ones who actually organize and put this world into motion. Otherwise, it's just a pile of atoms without any sense or form. The living entities come in. Brahma, all the demigods, and the living entities who want to enjoy, and things happen. The world is organized, planets are created, different species of life are created, all by the intelligence of the living entities and by their desires. So this does not contradict the idea that everything is Brahman. Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma. Everything is Brahman. But Brahman means him, the person, and his energies. The enemies are autonomous. They have their own existence. But they're not different from him. Okay? Okay, a couple more verses. Verse 11. Okay. I can read one, verse 10, sorry. One Vedanta Sutra comment here. Govinda Bhashya, in the first chapter, fourth part, text number 3. The sutra says, Tada dinatvad artavat. Pradana serves a purpose. Nature, material nature serves a purpose by being subordinate to Brahman. Someone may question, this world doesn't seem to have any purpose. Material nature seems to be useless. Existence seems to be useless. That's the philosophy of some people. The answer is, Baladeva Vibhushan explains, because material nature is subordinate to the Supreme Brahman, which is the ultimate cause of everything's existence, therefore she has a real purpose. By evolving from herself the different material manifestations, she serves her purpose. But these manifestations are not just meaningless or purposeless. They help fulfill the plan of the Lord. The Lord wants the living entities to voluntarily act as his servants. They don't want to be his servants. They want to enjoy separately. So to teach them the proper lessons, he gives them the chance to try to be independent. And Maya produces what is the paraphernalia needed for the living entity's exploitation of illusion. That's all part of the Lord's desire and plan. By facilitating all this, Maya is serving a very important purpose. So, only, Baladeva Vibhushan continues, only by the Lord's glance upon her does Maya become active. She doesn't even exist independently because she's simply inert energy. This is stated in the scripture. And he quotes, Mayam tu prakritim vidhi, mayanam tu maheshwaram. Verse 10. Know that Maya is the Lord's energy, and the possessor of Maya is the Supreme Person, Supreme Controller. And then the next verse. Asman mayi svijate vishvame tat. From this nature, the possessor, the magician, the Supreme Lord, creates this whole world. And then he quotes again, going back to the
beginning of the fourth chapter, first verse, he quotes, Ya eko varno bahuta shakti yoga varnan anekan hitartho dadati. The Lord himself has no material form, but he creates many material forms, all varieties of material forms, by using his personal energy. In this way, he fulfills his intentions. He carries out his own intentions. And then there's also a statement of Smriti, and Baladevi Devushan quotes, to also show how Maya becomes useful by serving the Lord's purposes. He quotes from the Bhagavatam, first canto. Sa eva bhuyo nija virya choditam swajiva mayam pratim sasrikshatim anama rupatmani rupanamani viditsamano nusasara shastra krit. The personality of Godhead, again desiring to give names and forms to his parts and parcels, the living entities, places them under the guidance of material nature. By his own potency, material nature is empowered to recreate. That's spoken by the ladies of Hastinapur when Krishna was leaving to go to Dwarka for the last time, in chapter 10 of the first canto. Okay. Text 11.
Yo yonim yonim aritishchat yeko yasminidam sambichaiti sarvam tam ishanam varadam devam idyam nichaye mam shantim atyantam eti.
He alone is the presiding deity of each causal element of creation. In him, this universe merges in annihilation and manifests again in its separate parts. By realizing him, the effulgent Lord, the supreme controller, the giver of benedictions, the most fit object of worship, one achieves the peace of spiritual life without end.
So,
Mula Prakriti, the original form of nature, is the cause of everything that's created. By her transforming into the Mahatattva and all the different elements, she creates. And these different elements, Mahatattva, Ahankara, false ego, three modes, these are the intermediate causes, but she's the primary cause. But the personality of Godhead alone is the original mover, the one who sets nature and all of her products into motion. He's the very foundation of their existence, of nature and all the material elements. Liberation comes by having personal realization of him. This controller of Maya, this Lord who exists underneath everything, he's present in everything, and everything merges in him when there is annihilation, and then there's a repeated creation again, everything comes out of him again. He is the regulator of everything, Ishanam. There are four adjectives describing him in the third line. Ishanam, he's the regulator of everything. Supreme controller. Varadam. Not only is he total dictator, but he's got his benevolent aspect. He's the bestower of all benedictions. Vara means a choice. Vara means I ask you, what do you want? What flavor ice cream do you like? Take your pick. So when you're asked to take your pick, that is called vara. And he's fulfilling the desires of the living entity, not just forcing things on them, giving them what he thinks that is good for them. He's asking them, what do you want? Fulfilling their desires. And therefore, he's idyam. He's worshipable by everyone, because he's absolutely in control, and he's also everybody's well-wishing friend. Devam, the effulgent, playful Lord. It says, nichayam. Nichaya we can translate as worshiping or realizing, we can translate it here. Realizing him by direct perception. But there's a original meaning that we saw earlier in the Upanishad when there was the metaphor of building in your heart the sacrificial fire on the altar, which is the image of meditating on the Lord in the heart. And the verb nichaya is there, which means collecting or piling up. Like you take the bricks and you pile them up to build the altar in five layers. Like that, one has to develop the meditation in one's heart. Gather together one's concentration. That's the image there by using the verb nichaya, which literally means collecting together or piling up. And one must cultivate and accumulate this Krishna consciousness in his heart. Thus, by this process, one achieves the ultimate peace of freedom from rebirth, cessation of ignorance and all its byproducts. And everybody in all the worlds wants this perfection. This is what everybody is striving for, this unlimited, endless happiness and freedom. Okay. Two more verses and we'll be done for today. Yes? 12 and 13, and you know, tomorrow we'll finish up the chapter. Yo devanam bhavavaschodbhavascha Vishwadipo Rudra Maharshihi Hiranyagarbham Pashyata Jayamanam Sano Buddhya Shubhaya Samyunaktu. Lord Rudra, the greatest mystic, is the creator and empowerer of the demigods, the ultimate ruler of the universe. He witnessed the birth of Hiranyagarbha Brahma. May he bestow upon us good intelligence. This is almost exactly the same verse as verse 4 from the third chapter. Only in the third line, the last two words are changed. So the idea has already been discussed. It's almost an exact copy of another verse. The only cause for developing knowledge is his mercy. Without his mercy, there's no developing real knowledge of him. He claims the privilege to remain unknown by those who don't surrender to him and those who don't please him. Only the person whom he chooses, whom he's satisfied with, only to that person does he reveal himself. So the only cause of knowing him is his mercy. Therefore, the sage is praying for his mercy here. Please, may he bestow upon us good intelligence to see him. Brahma didn't have, when he was first born, he didn't have this good intelligence. He was bewildered. He had to meditate. And he was finally successful when he got the Lord's satisfaction, when he pleased the Lord and got his mercy. Then the Lord personally educated him. So may we please also have that merciful glance of the Lord. That's the prayer here. Okay, one more verse. Verse number 13.
Yadevana Maripo Yasmin Loka Adishrita Ya Ishe Asya Dvipadash Chatush Padaha Kasmai Devaya Havishavi Deva.
He is the ruler of all the gods, and in him all the worlds reside. He controls every creature with two legs in the world, and every creature with four legs. Who is that Lord to whom we offer our oblations? Actually, this is a very famous verse. It's chanted sometimes in Vedic sacrifices, especially in wedding sacrifices. It's always chanted. Kasmai devaya habishavi deva. Because one way of understanding this is the word ka. Kasmai means unto ka. Ka can mean who, it's a question. But it's also one of Brahma's names. So kasmai deva could mean unto Lord Brahma. And Brahma, although he was cursed
There was an argument between Lakshmi and Saraswati at the beginning of creation. Saraswati is Brahma's wife. They had, not a beginning of creation, beginning of Kali Yuga. I don't know the whole story, but they disagreed with each other. And ever since then, wherever there is Saraswati, there isn't Lakshmi. Anybody who's educated usually isn't rich. And also, she got cursed by one of them. I don't know which one of them, his wife or the other lady, which one of them cursed him that he would not have almost any, we wouldn't have practically any worshippers in Kali Yuga. And we see nowadays, there's no temples of Lord Brahma there. In India, there are two, somewhere there's two temples of Lord Brahma only. And, otherwise he's not worshipped. If you go to Thailand, you'll see in front of every public building, very picturesque, on a pole, like little pagoda, little temple, miniature temple, and Lord Brahma is sitting in there, almost in front of every single public building. So in Thailand they worship him, but in India he's been cursed. Because he's Prajapati, he's the presiding deity of weddings, of marriage. And therefore in the wedding sacrifices, the Brahmins always chant this prayer, Kasmai Devaya Abhishabhide, we offer our oblations to Lord Brahma. So a commentator says, the Brahmins who perform sacrifice, they are worshipping Indra and other demigods with their offerings of different items into the fire. They want to go to Swarga Loka. They're less intelligent, therefore they're worshipping demigods. But we want liberation. We're intelligent sages. We're renounced sages. We're not going to attempt for something material. Therefore, let us render our worship and service to the one person who is the master of all the demigods. We don't know who he is, so we'll hedge our bets by offering oblations unto whoever he is, to whom it may concern, Kasmai Devaya. But, we're not satisfied with any demigod.